The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Good morning. It's Wheels Up Wednesday, October 2nd, 2024. A chilly 52 degrees. We're going to see about 90 today. Going to be 90. You know, fall at some point will be starting, I'm sure. It'll be one of those things where the switch will be thrown. It'll be a ka-chunk, and then all of a sudden it's 40. You know how that goes, right? Seem to be having a little bit more of that. Yes, I know, climate change. They talked about it in the debate yesterday. Ooh, carbon. Yes, 5% of the carbon production is causing 100% of all of the catastrophes around the world, because 5% is what... I mean, no, I'm surprised that J.D. Vance didn't mention that. Hey, you know that most of that carbon that you're talking about, all the miserable carbon dioxide that feeds the plants... 95% of it is naturally occurring, and then 5% from humans, and it's only the 5% from humans that are doing it. Yep, that's what we're supposed to believe. I just wanted to hear somebody say that, not call climate change a fraud, because, yep, things are changing, but it's a racket. That's really what this is about. It's a control grid. It's a racket. J.D. didn't say that, but he said a lot of other good things yesterday, and... Boy, I would imagine there's more than one Republican that was wishing, gosh, you know, if J.D. had been able to pinch hint for Don a couple of weeks ago, if Don had maybe, you know, caught WooFlu, you know, and then, can I have my vice president, pinch hint for me, Kamala? That would have been interesting, huh? Would have been interesting. Don's a great extemporaneous speaker, but he is not a great debater. J.D. Vance, on the other hand, very well prepared, very... smooth, prepared, and struck the right tone. I think he did a pretty darn good job on it. However, unlike practically every other Republican or right-wing media you're going to hear today, I don't think Walz necessarily destroyed him or hurt himself all that much. I know that you may disagree with me on that. Polling seems to be bearing that out. I'll talk about that here in just a little bit. But why don't we just get to the worst moment for Tim Walz of the night, last night. Let's just start that first. And that had to do with the conversation about China. And it was genuinely a bad moment.
You said you were in Hong Kong during the deadly Tiananmen Square protests in the spring of 1989. But Minnesota Public Radio and other media outlets are reporting that you actually didn't travel to Asia until August of that year. Can you explain that discrepancy?
Yeah, well, and to the folks out there who didn't get at the top of this, look, I grew up in small rural Nebraska, a town of 400, town that you rode your bike with your buddies till the streetlights come on, and I'm proud of that service. I joined the National Guard at 17.
Okay, so remember, he's being asked about Tiananmen Square, and he starts off with, I was born a poor white child.
To become a teacher, passionate about it, a young teacher. My first year out, I got the opportunity in the summer of 89 to travel to China. 35 years ago, be able to do that. I came back home and then started a program to take young people there. We would take basketball teams, we would take baseball teams, we would take dancers, and we would go back and forth to China. The issue for that was to try and learn. Now, look, my community knows who I am. They saw where I was at. I will be the first to tell you, I have poured my heart into my community. I've tried to do the best I can, but I've not been perfect. And I'm a knucklehead at times, but it's always been about that. Those same people elected me to Congress for 12 years. And in Congress, I was one of the most bipartisan people, working on things like farm bills that we got done, working on veterans benefits. And then the people of Minnesota were able to elect me to governor twice. So look, my commitment has been from the beginning to make sure that I'm there for the people, to make sure that I get this right. I will say more than anything, many times I will talk a lot, I will get caught up in the rhetoric, but being there, the impact it made, the difference it made in my life, I learned a lot about China. I hear the critiques of this. I would make the case that Donald Trump should have come on one of those trips with us. I guarantee you he wouldn't be... praising Xi Jinping about COVID, and I guarantee you he wouldn't start a trade war that he ends up losing. So this is about trying to understand the world. It's about trying to do the best you can for your community, and then it's putting yourself out there and letting your folks understand what it is. My commitment, whether it be through teaching, which I was good at, or whether it was being a good soldier or was being a good member of Congress, those are the things that I think are the values that people care about.
Governor, just to follow up on that, the question was, can you explain the discrepancy?
Just, all I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this. So I will just, that's what I've said.
Okay.
So I was in Hong Kong and China during the democracy protests, went in. And from that, I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance.
I learned about what needed to be learned in governance, which is sometimes you just have to lie to the rubes in Minnesota, who will then reelect me several times to represent them. I think it's kind of where he was going on that. All right. What about the deportation? A lot of conversation yesterday, last night, on the vice presidential candidates debate with J.D. Vance. And I think J.D. Vance sounded pretty good on most of the immigration conversation and walls. There was a little bit of back and forth there. And I think one of the first questions had to do with how would you do the deportation?
I don't want people who are struggling with addiction to be deprived of their second chance because Kamala Harris let in fentanyl into our communities at record levels. So you've got to stop the bleeding. You've got to reimplement Donald Trump's border policies, build the wall, reimplement deportations. And that gets me to your point, Margaret, about what do we actually do? So we've got 20, 25 million illegal aliens who are here in the country. What do we do with them? I think the first thing that we do is we start with the criminal migrants. About a million of those people have committed some form of crime in addition to crossing the border illegally. I think you start with deportations on those folks. And then I think you make it harder for illegal aliens to undercut the wages of American workers. A lot of people will go home if they can't work for less than minimum wage in our own country. And by the way, that'll be really good for our workers who just want to earn a fair wage for doing a good day's work. And the final point, Margaret, is you ask about family separation. Right now in this country, Margaret, we have 320,000 children that the Department of Homeland Security has effectively lost. Some of them have been sex trafficked. Some of them hopefully are at homes with their families. Some of them have been used as drug trafficking mules. The real family separation policy in this country is unfortunately Kamala Harris's wide open southern border. And I'd ask my fellow Americans to remember when she came into office, she said she was going to do this. Real leadership would be saying, you know what? I screwed up. We're going to go back to Donald Trump's border policies. I wish that she would do that. It would be good for all of us.
Tim Walz had to weigh in on that, too, a little bit differently.
And that is the United States Congress. That's the Border Patrol agents. That's the Chamber of Commerce. That's most Americans out here. That's why we had the fairest and the toughest bill on immigration that this nation's seen. It was crafted by a conservative senator from Oklahoma, James Lankford. I know him. He's super conservative, but he's a man of principle, wants to get it done. Democrats and Republicans worked on this piece of legislation. The Border Patrol said, this is what we need in here. These are the experts. And the Chamber of Commerce and the Wall Street Journal said, pass this thing. Kamala Harris helped get there. 1,500 new border agents, detection for drugs, DOJ money to speed up these the adjudications on this, just what America wants. But as soon as I was getting ready to pass and actually tackle this, Donald Trump said no, told them to vote against it because it gives him a campaign issue.
Notice how Tim Walz was talking about the immigration issue. Oh, the National Chamber of Commerce wanted it passed. Oh, yeah, because we know that the National Chamber of Commerce is so conservative and so in favor of really tough border enforcement policies. Said no one ever. Okay. My gosh, even the Oregon Chamber of Commerce is that way. There, you know, it used to be the Chamber of Commerce were kind of semi-conservative sort of deals. But no, generally speaking now, it's the woke good old boy system. Okay. That's pretty much where it is right now. And also, notice how he also said that it would have been about it would have had more people to involve adjudication. No, here's the deal: the adjudication was about keeping people in. It wasn't about getting people thrown out. It was about hiring more agents and more people to help escort these people into the country, which was also why Donald Trump said you don't want to pass that, and why a lot of Republicans finally came to their senses. And once again, it's kind of like if the Democrats are liking your border bill. It's kind of like when the Democrats give us a measure on ranked choice voting, consider the source. Okay. All right. And there was more conversation, and I think one of J.D. Vance's best parts of the night, or best points in the night, was when The two bubbleheads on CBS News ended up doing the fact check on the border and so much more. And J.D. was not going to be rolled over upon.
All this. Do you disagree that Congress controls the purse strings and would need to support many of the changes that you would actually want to implement? You have 1 minute.
Look, Margaret, first of all, the gross majority of what we need to do at the southern border is just empowering law enforcement to do their job. I've been to the southern border more than our borders are. Kamala Harris has been. And it's actually heartbreaking because the Border Patrol agents, they just want to be empowered to do their job. Of course, additional resources would help. But most of this is about the president and the vice president empowering our law enforcement to say, if you try to come across the border illegally, you've got to stay in Mexico. You've got to go back through proper channels. Now, Governor Waltz brought up the community of Springfield, and he's very worried about the things that I've said in Springfield. Look, in Springfield, Ohio, and in communities all across this country, you've got schools that are overwhelmed, you've got hospitals that are overwhelmed, you've got housing that is totally unaffordable because we brought in millions of illegal immigrants to compete with Americans for scarce homes. The people that I'm most worried about in Springfield, Ohio, are the American citizens who have had their lives destroyed by Kamala Harris's open border. It is a disgrace, Tim. And I actually think, I agree with you. I think you want to solve this problem, but I don't think that Kamala Harris does.
Senator, your time is up. Governor, you have 1 minute to respond.
Yeah, well, it is law enforcement that asked for the bill. They helped craft it. They're the ones that supported it. That's because they know we need to do this. Look, this issue of continuing to bring this up, of not dealing with it, of blaming migrants for everything. On housing, we could talk a little bit about Wall Street speculators buying up housing and making them less affordable. But it becomes a blame. Look, this bill also gives the money necessary to adjudicate. I agree. It should not take 7 years for an asylum claim to be done. This bill gets it done in 90 days. Then you start to make a difference in this, and you start to adhere to what we know, American principles. I don't talk about my faith a lot. But Matthew 25:40 talks about, to the least amongst us you do unto me. I think that's true of most Americans. They simply want order to it. This bill does it. It's funded. It's supported by the people who do it. And it lets us keep our dignity about how we treat other people.
Thank you, Governor. And just to clarify for our viewers, Springfield, Ohio does have a large number of Haitian migrants who have legal status. Right. Temporary protected status.
And here we go.
But thank you. Senator, we have so much to get to.
Margaret, I think it's important because
we're going to turn out of the economy. Thank you.
Margaret, the rules were that you guys weren't going to fact check. And since you're fact checking me, I think it's important to say what's actually going on. So there's an application called the CBP One app where you can go on as an illegal migrant, apply for asylum or apply for parole, and be granted legal status at the wave of a Kamala Harris open border wand. That is not a person coming in, applying for a green card and waiting for 10 years. Facilitation of illegal immigration, Margaret, by
thank
our
you,
own
Senator,
leadership.
For describing the legal process. We have so much to get to, Senator.
Those laws have been on the books since 1990.
Thank you, gentlemen.
The CBP app has not been on the books since 1990.
It's something that Kamala Harris created, Margaret.
Gentlemen, the audience can't hear you because your mics are cut.
And that is why you cannot hate the two CBS moderators enough. All right. But J.D. Vance was absolutely right. You had Walls doing the mushy thing. Well, this has been on the books since 1990. No, but the CBP phone app has not been. That's something which is brand new. And essentially, it's just walk in. The Biden-Harris, walk in, and off you go. And then you get dispersed to Springfield or wherever else it might be. There was also that, I'm surprised they didn't get to the Tim Walz that J.D. Vance didn't bring up. Tim Walz talking about, oh my gosh, we got 50 languages in our local public schools here. Like, what wonderful diversity here, instead of what chaos it really is, the open borders. So anyway, there was a lot of good. J.D., I think, did pretty well. And Tim, although, yeah, you could disagree with him, I don't think he did horribly. And I know that you're not going to hear that from a lot of shows today. And I think I'm right because I'm seeing this borne out today in the polling about how people are reacting to it. Now, the latest Fox News national polls on the debate here, Walls is slightly above water here with a 43% favorable rating and a 40% unfavorable. J.D. Vance, still in negative territory, 38% positive, 50% unfavorable. which is an interesting rating. I mean, you know, because I know that he ran circles around it, but essentially, we're not the audience. The American corrupticos that actually think that, you know, about half of the country, the corrupticos, they're the audience, and they're not convinced at this point from the looks of it. They like the, you know, they like the Chinese diddler, you know? There we go, Tim Walz. That's the audience. Hate to say that, but even though J.D. did great. I think J.D. did great. If you were talking about a logical thinking populace. And I think there, unfortunately, are fewer of us as time goes on. Thank you, government school system. Support the government. Here's your diploma. 26 after 6. Let me go to Michael. Michael, you're online here. Good to have you. What's on your mind, huh?
Well, a couple of things on the debate. Number one is what you just said is absolutely correct. We are not generally the audience of a debate like this. 95% plus of the people in the United States have already made up their mind who they're voting for. So I tuned in for about the first 10 minutes, and then my brain cells couldn't handle it anymore, so I tuned out. That's number one. So the listening audience, as you said, was those on the other side. So their poll is talking to those. Number two is I am so tired of this Donald Trump is going to ruin the democracy, the crap that goes on all the time. I really want all conservative candidates to step in and say, but we're not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic, so stop lying to the people. They have used that word over and over and over again that people are now believing that we are a democracy, and we're not.
There's another aspect of this. Speaking of the democracy, do you mind if I play? I know people are saying that the conversation when he was being fact-checked was the biggest night, but the biggest part of JD that I thought was quite interesting. Let me see. I want to make sure I have the right soundbite here, Michael. I want to play this for you because I think this was the a money moment for people who actually remember the old America.
I believe that we actually do have a threat to democracy in this country, but unfortunately, it's not the threat to democracy that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz want to talk about. It is the threat of censorship. It's Americans casting aside lifelong friendships because of disagreements over politics. It's big technology companies silencing their fellow citizens. And it's Kamala Harris saying that rather than debate and persuade her fellow Americans, she'd like to censor people who engage in misinformation. I think that is a much bigger threat to democracy than anything that we've seen in this country in the last 4 years, in the last 40 years. Now,
I thought that was a pretty darn good takeaway of the night.
Yeah, it is. It is. But once again, that term democracy in there, I would say he should have said that she is the biggest threat to your individual rights, not to democracy, because that's what it is. Taking away First Amendment rights.
You know, that's a very good point. You know, democracy, the democracy drinking game, of course, is just insane. But what it's also showing, though, remember when I talked about one of the challenges here is that these debates are for the idiot rubes that don't even know what a republic is. And unfortunately, that's the majority of the American people now. And I don't like saying that. It doesn't give me any pleasure to realize. I mean, I've been telling you that my entire life, my entire adult life has been recovering from my government education, government school education of the 1970s, 1960s and 70s. And I had a better one than my kids did. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, very true. So my last point real quick was on the border issue.
Yes.
There does not need to be anything passed by Congress to secure the border. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of laws on the books right now that just simply need to be enforced.
Do you mind if I give you a real American salute for saying such an obvious point, Michael? You know, when Tim Walz was talking about last night, oh, we got to go to Congress, this and that and the other. Listen, executive orders brought us to this crisis in the Biden-Harris administration. Executive orders can also get us out of it.
Yeah, well, it's basically allow those who have the responsibility to do their jobs properly. It's as simple as that. There's processes, there's rules, there's laws, there's regulations already on the books. Do the job that you are assigned to do and stop letting those politicians above you interfering from you doing your job.
Excellent. Excellent point. Thanks for doing that, Michael. Hey, hold the calls for right now. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Eric Peters, Wheels Up Wednesday, because we're still going to do that. And we're also going to talk with Jack Cashel, the author of Ashley. I called him up this morning because the one thing that I have not played yet was the number one biggest lie of the night. No, it had nothing to do with border enforcement or anything else like that. It had to do with January 6th. Nobody was fact-checking that. The biggest lie of the night at the debate, and Jack Cashel is going to refute that. I was spitting at the television, and Linda was wondering why I was spitting at the television. It had to do with the deaths that were going on there, okay? We'll talk about that and more.
Johnny Cash recorded I Walk the Line in 1956, and this first hit of many stayed on the chart for 40.
Jared today at 541-772-SOLD. That's 541-772-7653. Jared Hokanson of Hokanson Realty.
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Got something on your mind? Give Bill a shout at 541-770-5633. 770-KMED.
And specifically, something on your mind involving politics, transportation, and more, because it's Wheels Up Wednesday time. Eric Peters rejoins the program, epautos.com, holding it down there. And well, did you get a chance to watch last night's Veep debate last night, Eric? How are you doing?
Unfortunately, Bill, and it's awfully early in the morning to start drinking, but I almost feel the need in order to recover from it.
I want a democracy drinking game. Every time somebody says democracy, democracy, then you got to chug a beer. Would have been
or climate change.
Yeah. Oh, climate change especially. And you know, that was actually one of the missed opportunities from Vance last night. It's not that you had to call it a fraud or whatever it is, or a scam, what did President Trump call it? I think that I forget what Walls
supposedly a hoax.
Yeah, a hoax. There you go. All right. So weather changes, climate changing. Fine. It's always changing there like that. Just call it what it is, a fraud grift, because it's always about the money and the control. It would have been great to have heard J.D. kind of wax poetic on something like that. But it's almost like the Republicans are kind of afraid. We don't want to look like we're climate deniers, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, I know. I find it so exasperating. How do you effectively combat the left by agreeing with it?
And you can't. You can't. You can't really do that. You have to counter that. And one of the simplest things is that, okay, inert gas that feeds plants, 95% of it that's out there right now is due to just nature doing its thing. And the 5% of human activity from the carbon dioxide from human activity, that's the one destroying the planet, right? You know, just there.
Yeah, I would take a different tack at this point. I would point out that the very same people who are assuring us that the Black Death was afoot, who grotesquely and deliberately exaggerated the threat presented by COVID, are the very same people who are hyping and exaggerating and fear-mongering about climate change.
You know, it's a very good point. He could have, as in J.D., used the same, remember when he went after the experts, right, the tyranny of the experts. And by the way, J.D. Rightly was doing that. He could have applied the same thing to the so-called scientific consensus, the bought and paid for scientists that we have these days.
Yeah, I think so. I watched a guy, he was an eminently credentialed guy, and I wish I could remember his name. There was an interview that he did with Bill Maher recently, the comedian, and he essentially explained that to Maher. He said that, yeah, there may be some changing in the climate, but the question is whether it is, in fact, the existential threat that it is presented to be by these hysterics. And the answer is no, it isn't. And so this lunatic policy of completely altering our economy and our culture and everything for the sake of climate change is very much of a piece with all of the obedience rituals that we were subjected to during the COVID pandemic.
And also safe and effective. The safe and effective,
yeah.
And you better not say anything against against that. And I also have to say that when Vance ended up talking about the threat to democracy, the real threat to democracy. Let me play a little bit of that again, just just in case you forgot about that, folks.
I believe that we actually do have a threat to democracy in this country, but unfortunately, it's not the threat to democracy that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz want to talk about. It is the threat of censorship. It's Americans casting aside lifelong friendships because of disagreements over politics. It's big technology companies silencing their fellow citizens. And it's Kamala Harris saying that rather than debate and persuade her fellow Americans, she'd like to censor people who engage in misinformation.
And there we go. That is essentially the takeaway for the entire malady of what affects the American body politic, really. And that is, you know, you disagree, you shall be silenced, you shall be canceled, you shall be deemed a non-person. That is the world that we live in right now. And if you're not fighting back against that, and you know, that's the real threat. That's the real threat to the Republic.
I thought that he did really well there, and he might have elaborated a little bit more. To ask why it is that these people on the left are so afraid of discussion and stop using that term misinformation. You know, there's information and it's either true or false. And by bruiting it about, you can determine whether something is true or false. And that's all there ought to be to it.
Yeah. Is that what you're covering in the I notice you have a Reagan photo on the front page of Eric Peters Autos, the EP Autos. And there you go again. And we think about that fondly, but what was that full exchange? Can you remind us of what he was talking about at that point?
Yeah, well, this gets back to what we were talking about a moment ago, which is that conservatives have this unfortunate tendency to agree with their putative opponents. So everybody remembers, who's old enough to remember Ronald Reagan, remembers when he kind of mocked Jimmy Carter during one of their debates, and Carter was holding forth about how the federal government should be involved in medical care and acting as some kind of intermediary between people and doctors and so on. And Reagan said, well, there you go again. But if you listen to the whole thing, you know, it's not that Reagan was criticizing Carter for wanting the federal government to do that. It was simply that Reagan felt that the Republicans had a better plan than the Democrats.
And this reminds me last night on how even J.D., nobody's talking about the atrociousness that is Obamacare, only, well, the Republicans ended up saving it from its crushing failure. And it's like, no, it's still a failure. It just is. It is a failure. And it is unaffordable. And it is not the Affordable Care Act. And it is still crushing the United States of America's people that are having to work under it. But yet you can't go that far right now, right? You cannot go there.
Well, I can, but you know, establishment Republicans apparently can't. They're so. This is the greatest signal victory, in my opinion, of the political left over the past 50-something years, which is to make opposition to the left seem somehow embarrassing and shameful for even questioning it.
Indeed. And I think it's a great article. There you go again, all right, on epautos.com. All right. Do we have any transportation news that we need to be kicking around this week that we should know about, stuff that's been bumping around your fevered brain? Because we're not going to be able to fix the Republican and Democrat excrement show at the moment. Doesn't look that way.
No, I dove into hybrids the other day. Now, you and I have talked about hybrids before. And, you know, as such, per se, hybrids have a lot of advantages. But fundamentally, they are compliance cars. And what we're seeing right now is that the manufacturers, the car companies, are really going all in on these hybrids because they are a way to get around the problem of the electric vehicles, the chief problem being that they're not selling because people don't want them. So, you know, hybrids have the great upside of being appealing to people. But the problem is, it's still, and this gets back to our earlier conversation, it doesn't get to the fundamental issue because, okay, they comply for now. That's not where it's going to end. Eventually, the government is going to come around and say, well, it's not enough. And then they're going to go ahead and attack hybrids because the ultimate goal is to get rid of anything.
Well, they
Eric still has an engine.
Eric, they've already been attacking hybrids, which is why the EV was out there. And they've also attacked diesels for the same reason. That's the reason why Volkswagen has been essentially neutered. You know, on the diesel side of things, with that diesel scam of a few years ago, because it made the hybrids and the EVs look bad by comparison. Just did.
Yeah. Well, now Michael Reagan, who's the current head of the EPA, has his panties in a bunch because people who bought plug-in hybrids aren't plugging them in, and heaven forfend, you know, as a result, he says that their emissions are actually higher. You see, you know, you can tell where this is going. It's already a shot across the bow that hybrids aren't going to be good enough either.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to get at that last 0.00%, whatever it is, of the emissions that have to be dealt with, which really is just the excuse, again, for getting people out of anything that has an engine and into some kind of battery-powered device.
And getting back to what Republicans should be doing at this point, it's not, well, you know, we have to agree with these kind of regulations, but, you know, they're just not to... We can't not regulate this. We have to regulate it. We just have to regulate it with more common sense. It's like, no. And, you know, I just want to hear someone on the Republican side, including Orange Man, just say, no, not, well, you know, we just have to modify this a little bit. This is the part that gets really, you know, always playing the Washington Generals side to the Democrats playing the Harlem Globetrotters and always winning handily. Ultimately.
Yeah, there's always this implicit, accepted idea that if there's a problem, even if there isn't one, that naturally we got to have the government involved to fix it.
Well, even the child care talk
everything
from last night. I mean, all right?
It's only a matter of time probably before the government starts telling people what time they have to go to bed at night and what time they should get up in the morning.
And also what kind of child care you're supposed to have. Remember, they did that whole thing about child care. And what I wanted to yell at the television at this point is that, you know, neither side, Republican or Democrat, we'll sit there and focus on why is it that you need child care to be able to take care of your children? Oh, yep. It wouldn't happen to be the destruction of your dollar over a number of decades. By the way, that would be the Federal Reserve, which is inflation, which has made sure that one person is not able to make enough money to take care of a family so that one of the parents at least can take care of the children. We can't go there, though, right?
Yeah, and they won't touch things like the property tax on homes either, which also makes it very difficult for one earner to generate enough money to maintain a roof over people's heads. You've got the income tax, state tax, property tax. And so effectively, you have to have both the man and the woman working outside the home, and therefore the government becomes the babysitter of the kid during the day.
Yeah, both Democrats and Republicans are never willing to look at the true root. Now, and see, when they talk about root causes of problems with child care and everything else, the root cause is that we're not spending enough money. Being the government's not spending enough money, right? That's where they always come off. And that's
Not
true. Okay?
Yeah, you know, I read something very interesting that was on the Von Mises site, the economic site today about the child safety seats and how they're discouraging people from having more than two children. And, you know, J.D. Vance has been critiqued for that, but it's absolutely true. It's not the cost of the child seats per se. It's the cost of having to buy a bigger vehicle because you can't really use just two seats in a relatively small car. You have to move up to something like an SUV or a three-row vehicle in order to realistically carry three kids in three seats.
That's a
it's a form of birth control.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. I hadn't considered that. Thanks for bringing it up. Eric Peters is with me. It's Wheels Up Wednesday. We're talking cars, politics, and the idiocy known as the world today. And if you have a question or comment, 770-5633. Eric, we'll take some calls for you in just a minute, okay?
Okie dokie.
This is the Bill Meyer Show.
Two Dogs Fabricating Fall Blowout Sale on
CleatedElectricPlus.com.
It's the Bill Meyer Show on KMED, Southern Oregon's place to talk.
Eric Peters, automotive journalist and genius at epautos.com. Genius, rather, not genius. I like putting a T on the end of that, though, along with the automotive journalist. Let me talk with Tracy. Tracy, you wanted to talk about the EVs over in Mount Vernon. How you doing? Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I just got back from the East Coast, Virginia and Maryland, and I rented a Chevy Bolt. Bolt itself was not bad. Two quick observations first, then a biggie. The observation number one, it's Amazon in partnership with Rivian that is running all those electronic or EV delivery vans on the East Coast. And I got behind a whole wagon trail of those as they left the distribution plant.
No kidding.
So that's that. Number two observation, I learned that your freedom of movement when you own an EV is really based on the location of functioning, and I underline functioning charging stations.
Yep.
And I had to change plans completely where I was going to be entertaining or going to dinners or whatever, shopping or business was all based on charging stations. How sad. It's control of movement.
Sure, exactly. So, you know, it's one of the things that's been soft-pedaled by the propagandists for EVs. If you have to rely on charging the thing at home, the very best you can do is get back on the road in about 6 hours on a 240-volt hookup.
Yeah. So, and now the biggie. this, I had not thought this would happen to me. I go to a charging station that says, oh, it's online. I plug it in. Fine, it's charging. And then I get ready to leave. And, uh-oh, I cannot unplug it.
Oh, no.
I could not unplug it. The plug itself, the latching mechanism on the charging station plug was frayed. And somebody even drove up to me and said, hey, I was there for 40 minutes. I couldn't unplug it the other night. Mm-hmm. So I had to literally call a service technician at their helpline. They did answer, and they were graceful. We tried for 35 minutes to get the thing to unplug. Still wouldn't do it. You do all sorts of key sequences. You get out the user manual. Still couldn't do it. And I'm thinking, oh, no. I need to get somewhere. I'm stuck.
Yeah.
Well, it finally unlatched. But could you imagine this at a gas station?
Oh, people would be coming unglued if your nozzle wouldn't come out of the gas tank, right, Eric?
Well, this is an issue of complexity, you know, and you're dealing with very high voltage systems, so it has to be complex for safety, you know. And I'm not a safety Nazi, but you're dealing with high voltage electricity, so those connections have to be intricate, let's say, relative to what you're dealing with when you go to a gas station and you've got a pump, a simple mechanical device, basically, and you put the pump nozzle into the tank, you push the lever, and gas flows into the tank. It's a much, much, much simpler method of transferring liquid energy into the vehicle. With the EVs, it's a lot more complicated, and because it is more complicated, it's more failure prone inherently, and these problems are going to increase. The more people use these fast chargers, the more wear and tear occurs. It's just inevitable.
Tracy, thank you so much for sharing your experience. Eric, if you are a big EV aficionado at this point, maybe it'd be a good idea to have an insulated pair of bolt cutters, so that way if it won't let you go, you just go in there and you turn the charger off, and then you just take the bolt cutter and cut the cable. Would that work?
I wouldn't be the one to do that. Okay. Again, you're dealing with 400 volts.
Okay.
Messing with that, you know, the potential for an explosion. Something that's lethal, really serious stuff, and not to be fooled around with. You know, that's why EMS, you know, emergency services people, when they deal with even a hybrid, they have to be extremely careful. If you pop one of the hoods, you'll notice that all of that wiring is bundled in bright, bright orange tape to let people know what's there so that they don't accidentally cut into something.
All right. And we'll get back on some EVs and the hurricane here in just a moment. But I wanted to make sure we squeeze Vicky in from the Applegate. Vicky, you have a 1972 Ford Courier. I loved those little pickup trucks. I think those were now, Eric, weren't those Mazdas actually rebadged at the time, right?
They might have been Datsuns. I offhand don't know. I'm ashamed to admit.
Okay, but anyway, Vicky, what's the story about this? Go ahead.
Okay, so my husband, he's a contractor, and several years ago, he was doing a job, and this older gentleman had this little Ford Courier, and he used it to haul wood, and talk about a workhorse. The leaf springs on this thing, you could bounce to the moon and back on these.
Okay.
There was a little, we live up in the Applegate, and we're always looking for sources of heat to take with us camping or whatever. Well, there was a little miniature wood stove in the back of it, and my husband was inquiring about the wood stove, and he said, yeah, you can have the wood stove, but you got to take the truck. And
you got to take the truck?
Like,
really?
The truck, and he said, yeah, it comes, they're a package deal. And he said, okay, well, how much do you want for the truck? He said, $1.
No kidding.
$1, Eric.
Why don't I ever get deals like that?
Oh, my gosh. And so when he brought it home, now, my father, he's passed now, but my father was he had several 44s, just old cars up the yin-yang, and so I'm thinking, oh, God, seriously, you're going to bring another vehicle home? Well, when he pulled up in it, I thought it was green because it was covered with moss. And so we cleaned it, and I didn't resist. It was cute as a bug. I was like, oh, my God, this is probably the cutest little truck I've ever seen.
Now, do you still have it by chance?
We do. So we cleaned it up.
Yeah.
And it's mustard yellow.
Yeah. Yeah, and a friend of mine had one, mustard yellow, 1972, put a little cab on the back of it. I remember it well. And by the way, those are still repairable because they are Mazdas. They were Mazdas, rebadged Mazdas. I looked it up, Eric. Just found it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yep.
And he's replaced the, I mean, he's been working on it. We're getting ready to do the brakes. And although the parts are very cheap, a few of them were a little hard to get, like the springs for the brakes.
Yeah.
My question, actually, Bill, was about a canopy. My husband's wanting to know if we can't find a canopy that actually goes to that model, what is a comparable canopy that might fit something else that might fit it?
Hmm.
Well, I would look at any other compact-sized truck that was built roughly during the same era because probably it's going to fit. So if you look at a Chevy Love, let's say, what was the Datsun equivalent of that? I can't remember. But any compact-sized truck, you can probably find something that's going to fit that thing.
Okay. And I was thinking it was from the Datsun family, too, when I first saw it, you know, because it looks like a little Datsun. But, my husband's replaced the headlight. We just redid the seat. Now, the dash is... It kind of tore up.
Oh, yeah, it's beaten up in the sun, but that is something to hang on to, Vicki.
Absolutely.
Because it is, it's very simple mechanically, and parts are available for it. There's almost a little cult going on, I've read online.
And by the way, guys, if you want to get a dash for a vehicle like that, there's a great company called Just Dashes. If you put it in any search engine, you'll find it. And they will either have or can restore the dash for a vehicle like that to brand new condition.
Oh, that's great. So, Vicki, all the best to it. Great story. And, Joy, she gets the pickup truck for $1. I love that. I'd take that deal all day.
All day long. Yep.
All right. Let me grab one more call before we take off here. Hi, you're on with Eric Peters. Good morning. Who's this?
Yep. Oh, this is Kirk.
Hey, Kirk, how you doing? What's on your mind?
Good. I was just curious if Eric heard anything, more of a curiosity. With the hurricane and all, what happened to all the either Teslas or full electric cars that, I assume when the batteries are 2 feet underwater, that's a real mess.
I'm glad you asked because I just published an article about that, which you can see on the site, which also has some videos embedded of the vehicles going up in smoke.
So, yeah. It's happening right now, Kirk. And
specifically, there's a reason for that. You remember the original Star Wars where Luke destroys the Death Star by firing the missile down the ventilation shaft?
Yep.
It's essentially the same thing with these EVs. The battery packs have a vent. The vent is located fairly high up. The problem is when the car gets flooded, water will reach the level of that vent and get into the battery, and boom, there you go.
Kirk, I appreciate the call, and yet it's happening. You can read this article right now on epautos.com. Thank you for the call. Hey, Eric, before we take off here, let's talk about your latest review. Now, is this the Fiat, or what did you say?
The 500E. Did you enjoy that?
Okay, I hadn't had a chance to read it yet. I just wanted to get a quick thumbnail, and I'll go read it. But
it was interesting in that it was an opportunity to do a direct comparison between one and another of essentially the same thing. Fiat used to sell the little 500 micro car that everybody knows about until the end of the 2019 model year when they pulled it. Well, now they brought it back. It's the same car, but it's electric now.
Okay.
And it costs twice as much and goes half as far.
Twice as much and half as far. Okay.
Everything you need to know about electric vehicles.
All right. Well, you're getting less for more. You got to love that today in the car world, right?
Well, and they've managed to destroy the car's chief virtue, which at the time when you could still get it with an engine was that it was dirt cheap. A friend of mine bought one and paid about $13,000 for it, brand new, about $2,000 off the sticker. And this is an ideal little city car, good car for older retired people. Now what they've done is transformed it into an entry luxury device. The thing starts around $32,000 now.
Yeah, okay. What is the least expensive car right now that you can actually get? An actual production conventionally engined car. Is there anything affordable at this
Nissan
point in
Versa.
Time?
It used to be the Mitsubishi Mirage. Mitsubishi has taken it off the market. Mm-hmm. I think Nissan's going to take the Versa off the market too, but for now, at least this year, you can still get a Versa, and I think the base price of a Versa is something around $17,000.
Really? So you can still get that for now?
Yep, for now, but not much longer.
All right, now let me ask you, does it have the dreaded continuously variable transmission?
It does, but I think it still comes standard with a manual, believe it or not. At least it did last year. I'm not quite sure about the current model year, but it used to, and that makes it even more appealing to me.
So who are you going to be, or what are you going to be reviewing for next week? What do you say?
Something a little more interesting. At least it's not a device. It's the Audi A7, which is, you know, one of those coupe-like sedans, but it's also a hatchback, so it actually has some room in the trunk, which makes it more appealing than, say, a BMW 5 or a Mercedes E, and even more so because it still comes standard with a 6. On the downside, it starts around $70,000.
Okay, a little bit out of my price range, but I always enjoy reading about it anyway. At least it's not a 2.04, four-cylinder turbo or twin-turbo charge.
Yes, exactly, universal compliance engine.
Okay, Eric, thanks so much. Always good talking with you, and try to recover from your abuse at last night's debate. Okay?
I will. Recovery is only a bottle away.
All right, there we go. Drink heavily, that's what we say. It's a couple minutes after 7, epautos.com. Eric's website, go and read and support. I think you'll enjoy it. And register for the website so you can comment, too. A lot of great people commenting. It's 3 minutes after 7. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, and KVXG Grants Pass. Town Hall News next. We're